Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. If they aren't biting, catch them with content. We channel content and connections at Conduit Incorporated. So for all your custom content needs, visit www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, today's conversation is with a woman named Sarah Scudder. She is the newly minted CEO of Procurate 5, which is a new organization that amalgamates the print buy and uses a software to source printing. And it is a really, really unique organization and one that fits Sarah perfectly because she has a long history of selling in the print and the print distribution industry. And she spent 12 years as the chief growth strategy officer at the sourcing group. Sarah has done a lot of work with the PSDA. She sits on their board. She's done a lot of work innovating with youth leadership groups within that capacity. And so she has great perspectives on two pieces to the puzzle. One is, where do we find great new young people and how do we recruit them to our industry? It is an age-old question that's been dogging our industry for quite a while. She has some really, really fun perspective on that. And the second is, how do we sell in this day and age? And without beating a dead horse, we know that the dynamics and the landscape have changed dramatically in our industry. And Sarah has been not only selling, but has been leading some sales groups over the past several years and has some perspective on how that has dramatically changed. So a really, really fun conversation. I was encouraged by her vision around recruiting youth, and I was even more encouraged by her vision on how to sell and connect in this modern landscape. So without further ado, let me share some of my conversation with Sarah Scudder. You know, you got to be, the problem with the internet and the social and everything is extraordinary. If you think about it, we live in this world now where it's like everything is extraordinary, and you can't, you know, my kids are watching YouTube videos and it's of the greatest stuff and it's the greatest moves or it's the most outlandish stuff. And I wonder if that's in some respects sets the bar too high and people don't get real. I don't know. Do you ever think about that kind of stuff?
I think beyond more than that, it's about attention span now.
What?
I just read an article that I'm actually posting on Facebook in the next couple of weeks. And it says the average American's attention span is now 6 seconds. So as a marketer, we have 6 seconds to make a video, write a sentence, put a blurb in an email. And that really changes the way all of us communicate. And in the print world, we've historically been known to be a bit wordy and lengthy and more traditional. And so I think everything really is shifting.
Yeah, that's a really valid point. It is a really tough thing to even get noticed, let alone hold somebody's attention. You know, it's one thing to get somebody's attention, but then hold it is even harder because, once you pass that initial grabbing of their attention, do you run in the same circles with me? Is your story compelling enough? And we're all like little rabid squirrels, you know, that can't hold I do it every day. So I mean, I'm not pointing the finger because I'm the same way. I mean, there's so many things that I juggle in my mind, and I don't know. I mean, there are times when I chastise myself when I get pulled off into something else. And And yes, I tend to be a little bit wordy, but what do you think the remedy is, or is there a remedy?
Well, I think there's really been a shift in the last 12 months where marketing and sales are really becoming one.
Right.
So I think 10, 15 years ago, there was a very, very clear distinction. You had depending on the size of the company, you would have a sales team and you had a marketing team, and they worked kind of in silos and didn't really like each other and didn't want to communicate. And now I think because of the media and just the internet, and we have everything at our fingertips and a short attention span, I think it's really becoming one. So at my new company, Procure at Five, our sales and marketing is one team. And so we're developing processes that tie marketing and sales together in regards to digital marketing, email campaigns, follow-up, kind of everything is one. And I think that's a big shift, and I think more and more companies are going to be doing that.
Yeah, it sounds like that. I was just reading an article, and it was about sales content versus marketing content. So there's this, in fact, I just wrote a blog about content. I get a little nervous around this whole content marketing thing because I've been doing content / publishing for 10 plus years now. And I worry that we tend to jump on the next big thing. And my biggest concern is that people aren't using discipline to uncover the content, that they feel like, let me just create content and throw it out there. But that's akin to someone who runs out into the middle of the college quad and starts talking about reverse mortgages, you know, and nobody's listening. There's got to be some discipline to uncovering the real stories. So that's a big deal to me, but you're absolutely right. I think there that in this day and age, you know, you and I have talked about this before, and that is it's hard to knock on doors. It's hard to send an email and get somebody to notice. So I'm assuming that's at the basis of you know, I'll get to you and who you are in a second, but I'm assuming that's at the basis of why you've, you know, made this move and why your company is doing what you're doing, is that it's you know, there's got to be something a little bit different in terms of engagement. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think our industry has been historically a little behind the curve in how they develop sales processes, how they do marketing. And so I'm able to combine technology, creative services, digital marketing, and sales, and really develop something that I think is going to be really effective and be able to drive significant inbound leads instead of always having to constantly chase down and try to go after people one at a time.
Yeah. So I'm pretty fascinated with that, and I'm fascinated with this gig of yours, but let's step back. So, I think you and I are on the same page. I think there's a lot of thoughtful people right now on this idea around whether it's, you call it the merging of sales and marketing, or the creation, the publishing process, all that kind of, I'm all in. I love it. But before we talk about Procure at Five and this new gig, and exactly, tell me about you, Sarah Scudder, you know, because you've got some history in the business, and you know, so give us some background. Where'd you grow up? All that kind of stuff.
So I am a California girl through and through.
Okay.
Born and raised in Northern California, and decided to major in business and economics. I was actually planning to go into the fashion industry. Mm. I have done some runway modeling and done some commercial and movie work.
Oh, wow.
And so had aspirations of actually going into runway production, so somewhere along the lines of producing fashion shows. So I majored in business, went to Sonoma State University. It's a very small state school in wine country, about an hour north of San Francisco.
Yep, I know it.
While I was there my freshman year, I thought economics was a really nice tie-in to my business major, so I picked up a second major, had a minor in American Multicultural Studies. I think the world is becoming so global and so interconnected, and so I thought that was an important focus to have as well. and then I had an emphasis in marketing. So I was very, very involved in college. I am not someone who is an academic. I am not gifted academically. School was never my favorite thing. But what I learned from going to school was how to leverage relationships and connections to further myself. So I may not get an A in calculus, and I may not know how to do a detailed analysis of a quadratic formula, but I learned how to build a network and how to connect with people and how to help people. And by doing that, furthering myself and my career and getting things done. So I really, really focused on being involved. I was president of 5 or 6 organizations. I started an organization when I was in college and really focused on networking and relationships. I was president of my sorority my junior year in college. I'm not sure if you were in the Greek system as well, but I was an AGD, Alpha Gam.
Okay.
And after my president gig, which is like a full-time job and great experience. I traveled all over speaking and led a pretty amazing team of women. I decided to put on our big fundraising event. It was called Lip Jam at the time. And it was kind of like a have fun party, but really talented dancing performance act. So it was a fancy lip sync production. And we raised money for diabetes, which was the international philanthropy for my sorority. So we put on the event, most successful event we ever had, raised a significant amount of money. And while putting on the event, I had a lot of print and promo work that we needed to do, apparel, tchotchkes, print material, direct mail. And so I found a local company that was 10 or 15 minutes from our campus called Golden Pacific Systems, mm-hmm. and hired them to do all the print sourcing and work for our event.
Excellent.
So after our event, a very, very innovative individual named John Suey was overseeing sales at Golden Pacific, and he really saw a big need in the industry and within their company to bring in some young people. He felt their company did not have that young energy and that person to kind of spearhead the growth that they needed. And looking at the industry as a whole, felt that there definitely needed to be a focus on more youth. So he came to me and said, hey, I'm looking to, you know, bring on some young people, potentially do an internship program with Sonoma State. Would you be interested in coming on board when you graduate and helping out with that? My initial thought, which I did not say out loud, is absolutely not. I have no interest in going into the printing industry with a bunch of old men.
Right.
No, thank you.
Right.
And that was a far cry from my interest in going into the fashion industry, moving to Southern California, going to New York. But what I had learned from all my networking and connections and relationships while in school was that it's really, really important to get experience. And you never know what one opportunity will lead to another. So I said, well, I'd love to come and meet the team and just kind of see how it goes. So I spent some time meeting with the team, interviewing, and decided after doing a lot of research that I am very, very entrepreneurial, very creative and innovative, and I probably wouldn't do well at a large company. I'm not one to come in and work in silos or kind of be given something and have to do something in an exact format or structure. I'm much better at someone saying, you know, grow our company by $10 million and just run with it.
Right.
So I decided to take it. It was a sales job, and I started 3 days after I graduated. And fast forward 9 or 10 years, I grew the company substantially. It took us from a $3 million local print distributor to a national print distributor doing over $13 million a year. And throughout that time, I was able to, you know, really build a value proposition and really build a technology solution that we were able to sell, and really shifted the focus of the company from transactional and price focused to selling a solution. And with that solution came print and all the products and materials.
Wow.
Our CEO of Golden Pacific was ready to retire, and so sold the company to the Sourcing Group, which is found, owned and was founded by three guys, all with an industry background in print. They were very young, very innovative, had three offices on the East Coast, and were looking to expand to the West Coast. So we were acquired in May of 2013, and I was promoted to the chief growth officer for the company, and it was an incredible opportunity. I am very, very blessed to have worked with such an innovative and supportive team, and very close with and friends with the owners and founders today. And throughout those 3.5 years, we had substantial growth, opened 8 offices, and really closed some large national deals, and built a pretty substantial footprint as a large print distributor.
Right. Cool. All right. So that's. I mean, to me, that's a lesson in itself. I mean, it's really fast. I mean, I know we're talking about sales and marketing and how it's done differently, but gosh, it's kind of what's missing today. That entrepreneurial attitude, that go-getter attitude that you had in college, clearly you had a great sense of self, and you know, to hear you say, to assess and say, look, I wasn't very strong in this area and I was stronger in this area, that's a big deal. But you know, our industry has a challenge in recruiting some new blood, and the new blood today is also got some challenges among it, because it's maybe it is kind of that understanding of where they want to go, and the risk taking, and the you know, to put yourself out there, so to speak. So it's really amazing to hear you talk about how you put yourself out there and you were orchestrating this stuff on campus. I mean, I just get this picture in my head of this this little entrepreneur who's a little event coordinator and working feverishly to get things done and entertain people. And it's interesting that they took notice of you because of that. But it's tough. I mean, there's not a lot of people like that, Sarah. I mean, today's youth, I'm not sure I get that sense. Do you?
Well, you mentioned something about the challenge in our industry of hiring millennials and entrepreneurs, and the topic of millennials is very, very important to me. It's something that I'm really passionate about. I, being a millennial executive, sometimes, first of all, get tired of the word millennials. I feel like it's overused and, you know, talked about a lot. So, you know, I do a lot of writing and speaking about millennials, about how to attract, hire, and retain them, how to build workforces to onboard and retain them. And I think one of the biggest challenges for companies in general, not just within our industry, is companies don't have the right setup and structure for millennials to succeed. So what I see happen a lot is, first of all, the hiring process is not set up to lend itself well to millennials. So they're not necessarily asking the right questions and having the right process. And then when a millennial is hired and onboarded, there's not a lot of process and structure around how to ensure that they're going to be successful. And when you look at the print industry, I think it's pretty fair to say a lot of companies in our industry do not have sales processes in place when a salesperson is onboarded. Mm-hmm. So someone gets hired, they get, you know, maybe a little bit of training in customer service and marketing, kind of walks through what they're doing, and they get handed some pieces of paper and that's it. There's not a formal process to teach people about value proposition and building relationships and having a lead generation system and following up and attending conferences. And so it makes it really challenging for a millennial to be thrown into an environment with no system or process for them to be successful, and without them being able to have the interaction and building a community with other millennials. And when I talk to and speak with companies that have millennials, I really, really stress that they involve millennials in the hiring process. And once a millennial is onboarded, they involve the millennials with the retention of that employee also. Mm-hmm. Because millennials like to be around other millennials and they want to have peers and feel like they're part of a team and building something. And if they're kind of off in a silo or working with people that are twice their age and don't really have a lot of interactions with other people their age, it can be challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's no doubt that my one concern with all that. So I'm with you. You know, the millennial thing, I don't like the word either. But more than that, I don't like the age segregation that's going on in the world. And it certainly is in business. It's, you know, obviously in schools and youth sports and the like. And so while I concur that as time goes on, the dynamics in the world change, the landscape changes, meaning the tools that we use to engage change, and that changes everybody. There are millennials with certain behaviors that are driven out of the habits of the technology that are at our fingertips. Well, a lot of those habits I own as well, you know, and I'm a Gen Xer. And so, you know, it's interesting for us to all, I mean, I'll point fingers and, you know, yet I'll still be looking at all my devices. And so we all collectively share some of these things. And so I do believe that over the course of time, the dynamics and the variables at play in business have changed, and that an industrial age model, like the printing industry, does have to change that. Not only, and I think the things we're talking about today are, and we're going to get back to your next gig here, but the things we're talking about are, one, this generation or how people engage on both how we engage on the sell side, but also how we engage with our own employees and how those dynamics have changed. So I think that's really, really compelling. I do fear that there is not enough work being done, like you said, with that, but also not just to cater to a age-specific group, but to say, look, you know, there's not really, I like engaging with older people. I think there's great history there. I tell my mother that, you know, I think she needs to be writing and chronicling stories, and that there's great history there. And it goes kind of back to the publishing process I was talking about, is that if we don't have any discipline in our learnings, you know, a lot of times the way we learn today, I mean, we can just Google something. And there's great, I mean, think about this time that you've spent in this industry. There's great value in that experience. There's great value in the fact that you created, you did the hard work of engagement and networking, and you can look back at those stories. So, so I agree with you, and but I still, you know, I feel like there's a lot of it goes. It's not just them. I mean, it's all of us, and we need to say, you know, there's opportunities to share with older people, different. I want my kids to be able to do that too. I don't want to just say, hey, you know, you're X years of age and you better stay with the people who are X years of age. I mean, so, but I think that's really, really valuable that you're dead nuts on in terms of how we engage and on both sides. And so let's turn the page and let's look at, so you leave the sourcing, so you've left the sourcing group, right?
Yeah, and I want to, there's a great movie that illustrates the point you just mentioned about it is important to interact with people of all different walks of life and background and age, and it's called The Intern.
Oh, yeah.
It's with De Niro and Anne Hathaway, and it does a really good job of illustrating a young millennial CEO who actually brings in someone in his 60s or 70s and how the age gap in the generation actually helps and transforms the company.
I have not. I mean, I think I've seen, you know, little snippets or on the, but see, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a really important thing. So we're at a heightened awareness, you know, we're in a time when people, I mean, I think the biggest challenge, and maybe you can comment on this, is that, you know, the answers are there. I mean, the ideas are there. Like, we can sit down and have this conversation with printers across the country or widget makers across the country or whoever and say, look, you know, things have changed. Let's talk about the dynamics that are at play here. And I don't know that anybody would disagree, right? There's not too many people. The question is executing on it. You know, we're pulled back into this world of, yeah, that's really nice and that really sounds wonderful. Yeah, I'm going to just go cold call, or I'm just going to go do it the way, you know, it's, and they step back into, so that step to getting traction on all this is the tough thing. You know, everybody thinks this seems to agree, but I wonder how we start getting people to really, really take action and take a look at this. Mm-hmm. So tell me about Procure-It 5. Because this is now, so you've gone off to this gig now, and tell me a little bit about that, why it was attractive to you, and, you know, what you guys are going to do and what the whole premise is.
Yeah, so today starts my fourth week. And so Procure-It 5 is really uniquely positioned in the market as a print procurement outsourcer. So really what the value proposition is an organization has a team of people on staff purchasing print, or there's a certain number of buyers or a buyer that purchases print along with several other categories within the organization. And the whole value, our whole value proposition is, hey, look, your company X, your area of expertise is Y, focus on your core competency and what you do best, and outsource the print procurement function to us. We leverage a proprietary procurement software internally. Our team of print procurement experts in all different categories, whether it's packaging, labels, apparel, promo, more traditional print, marketing materials, will purchase it on the company's behalf using a software. And the software is a buying tool. It has a significant number of supplier setups, and every job is bid out. The proofing, the purchase orders, everything is done and tracked within the software. And what's really unique about the software also is the data component. And I think data is so important now. And if you look at marketing execs, many, many times the topics of conversation on panels, if you're going to conferences, is around data and how can you market smarter and better to your customer. It's about having data to know who they are, what they want, and then giving it to them. So our procurement software tracks the data and statistics that record the buying habits and the buying information on behalf of the client. So they get visibility into what they're spending within different product category types, where they may be overspending, where they may be underspending, changes or modifications that can be made to the print to be more effective. And then it tracks savings data. So by looking at a large supplier base and bidding out jobs, how can we reduce costs? So that is a very important and unique component as well.
Mm-hmm. And so this was, you know, you were obviously, because you've lived your life in a sales process and managed people and around this. So what has changed? I you know, I don't want to necessarily, obviously there's some obvious things that have occurred over the course of time, but clearly are some things that have changed, and so that made this compelling for you because it fits right in with what you believe.
Yeah, so I was presented with a really incredible opportunity to run an organization and really focus on the strategy and value prop and focus on specific markets where we can add tremendous value and really build out a strategic marketing and sales process to drive significant growth, significant revenue, while leveraging technology and this innovative software. So I was ready for the next opportunity in my career, having, you know, spent my life and background in sales. And so taking on a president role, I'm heavily, heavily focused and involved in our sales and marketing process and building out systems. But one of the biggest changes that I've noticed so far in my first 3 weeks is really putting that strategy hat on and thinking about the long term. Here we are today. How are we going to get to the next step in a year? Where are we going to be in 2 years, 3 years? And how do I build out the right team to get us there? Because at the end of the day, to me, a great leader hires people smarter and better than them. So really understanding where I think I can excel and what my strong skill sets are, but then where I may not be as strong and how can I recruit and bring on the right talent to build out a company that is very successful.
Right. Right. How do you think, so as you go on this, you embark on it. So, how has selling, so talk it specifically, because I mean, you've seen this and you're about to see it from an even different side, but how has selling changed in your mind, you know, in the B2B space and, you know, specifically printing?
Yeah. So I would say there's a couple major changes I've noticed. The first is selling is now the decision making is now a group process.
Right.
So whereas 5 or 10 years ago, you would go and sell directly to the CFO, you would sell directly to the CPO, to the VP of indirect, the CMO, whoever that ultimate buyer was. And now there is often a group of people between, I would say, 5 and 8 decision makers that are involved in a process. Mm-hmm. So it's very challenging, one, to figure out who are all the key stakeholders, how do they fit together, and how do you sell and appeal to all those different people who have different needs and goals. Mm-hmm. And then determining at the end of the day who's signing the contract. And still, even though there's one individual signing off on the contract, it's much more of a group decision-making process. And that's a major shift.
Right. How about getting... Go ahead.
I would say the second major shift is the RFP process, the dreaded RFP. Mm. So we see a substantial amount of RFPs now coming out, and these are typically from your Fortune 1000 companies, definitely the larger firms, where they may not have done an RFP in the past, or it may have been much more toned down. These are large formal RFPs, and oftentimes now they're not even being implemented by the company themselves. They're being implemented by a third party. So they're bringing in a consulting group that's actually carrying out the RFP, and sometimes you can't even get FaceTime or phone time with the actual decision makers at the company.
Right, right. And yet our model continues to do that. So, I mean, I talked to a guy the other day and he was saying, you know, I knock on doors. You know, I cold call. I don't know what else to do. This is what I do. I send emails. I try to get, you know, that's how I do it. It's so, that's kind of that's got to change. It doesn't fly anymore. It just doesn't seem to work, right?
So I think it's about developing a process. I think emails can and still are very, very effective if they're written the correct way. So I founded a group called Young Innovators about 6 years ago. I run it under the PSDA, a large distributor association in the print industry that I serve on the board for. And every year I put on a conference, and the conference is focusing on youth and innovation and how do we attract, hire, and retain young people in the printing industry. And last year I had a speaker come in, and his name is Neville. He's a millennial entrepreneur, has his own company out of Austin, and he's someone that I've followed for several years now. And he teaches people how to write, and how to write emails that actually get responses. They're funny, they're clever, how to write titles, how to write follow-ups. And so I think if you leverage certain skills, and there's things you can do to make emails effective, but it's much more than email. It's about building a brand presence online. It's about being on social, providing relevant content. I think another key part of the equation is attending conferences. So one of the things that for Carrot 5 we're actually analyzing and looking at for the rest of this year and next year is who are our buyers and what conferences do they go to, and then we're going to those conferences. And then you have your biz dev team set up meetings for you, or you do it yourself depending on the size of the organization. Send emails, send LinkedIn notes, get your meetings pre-set up. Make a list of all your top buyers that are going to be there. Make a printout with their photos, facts about each of them, and don't leave until you meet them. And you can walk up to them in the hallway. You can sit next to them. But it's a great way to get in-person FaceTime with someone. And then you have a reason to follow up. Hey, it was great. I met with you on Tuesday. We talked about X, Y, and Z. You know, I'd like to set up some time with you next week. How does Friday look? Type thing.
Yeah, in our industry, most everybody is going to the conferences within the industry. You know, I had a friend of mine who said he spoke to a sales team. He's a printer, and he spoke to a paper company's national sales meeting. And he told them, you know, listen, stop going to conferences, stop going to the print, you know, the same industry stuff. And because that's, you know, obviously just kind of walking around looking at each other. It's almost, you know, and yet, you know, you should be going where your clients are. I spoke to a couple of schools, and I used to tell, you know, the guys, I'd go into the class, I said, look, if you want to meet a girl, you have to be where they are. You can't be sitting in your dorm room playing Xbox. And
I think it's a huge challenge for a lot of people in our industry who have been in our industry their entire careers, or have been in the industry for a substantial amount of time, is they just go to print conferences. But you're right, that's not going to grow your book of business. So our focus at Procure at 5 is, we go where our prospects are, and we want to get FaceTime and get in front of them. What boards are they on? What associations are they members of? And what conferences do they go to?
Right, right. So what's your prediction? What is your, you know, as you look at this industry, and now you're seeing it from a different perspective, and you step back and you look over, and I think unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, we're not in a world where you can project out long term. Long term has changed because the life cycles in our world are so much shorter. So let's just say over the next 3 years, what do you think are the trends that are going to dramatically impact this industry, and what do you think that mean? What's the opportunity?
So I think more printing companies are going to turn into marketing service organizations. They're going to branch out into creative services, into web design, into marketing companies. Mm-hmm. Print will be a much smaller piece of the end product that they sell. Mm-hmm. I think more and more companies are going to adapt software and technology internally to become more efficient, but also externally, and people, more and more people are going to start selling technology systems instead of print. I see a continuation of the acquisitions. So on both the distributor side and the vendor side, I think more and more companies are going to consolidate. Mm-hmm. I also see a trend of more remote working from home. Oh, yeah. So I think a challenge has been people, there's not talent in the local town or in the area, and so you're not getting the right candidates. But I see more companies now looking nationally and saying, well, if we find someone great who happens to be in New York or happens to be in Ohio, we're okay with that. And we're going to have a solid sales process and system. We're going to onboard them. We're going to have a way to measure their productivity while they're working remote. Right. And I think companies will be able to get more and more talent by doing that.
Yeah, it's a different world. And I mean, it's and that goes back to your point earlier, right? And that is that it's not just the quote unquote millennials. It's the world has changed. And part of every generation has been impacted. Every working generation has been impacted by the dynamics. And so, you know, we don't necessarily work 9 to 5 all the time, you know,
and I think another big change is how companies structure their sales and marketing teams. I think we're going to see kind of a movement away from large commissions. Historically, you get people in our industry making 20 to 40% commissions on, you know, an account they've had for 10 years. I think we're going to hire people on as with salaries and maybe some sort of small incentive. And we're going to have less, quote, outside salespeople. And we're going to have technology driving inbound leads and more of a inbound follow-up account management type structure.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that one of the fatal flaws of the printing industry and maybe industrial age selling overall is that there is no central repository of information. You know, what we do here is, you know, we do a lot of custom publishing and you know, we do it because we believe it's a great way to listen as well as communicate and put out content. So that process is unbiased. It's inoffensive, and it's really, really a lot of fun to be able to talk to people when you're not selling them anything. So I think that when you gather that data in that insight, when I have a conversation with someone or my editor or writers, you know, connect with people, they're able to put that back into a central repository, and then you're able to form not only stories but insights. And I think when you look at commission-based sellers that, for example, work for printers, there is no marketing backbone. There is no central place that all that feedback goes. Yeah, they might be able to say, I quoted this, I lost it, or I quoted this, I won it, and I have a general sense of, you know, what the market price is. But they don't understand, the company doesn't understand that, like what you were saying earlier, that there's a group process of buying at this company that we're dealing with, or that so-and-so is fearful that her boss just lost the job and you know, there's a new boss coming in, or that, you know, there's internal politics. All that insight and understanding of how things get done, they don't dump it in there. And there's a reason. Part of that is that the salespeople don't want to share that information with the organization because they feel like it's their account and they hold on to that. Even in 2017, they're even holding on to that. And two is that they don't all gather the same information. You know, there's no standard, like you talk about process. There's no standard for saying, look, I have to, it's not enough to just say, well, give me the players in there or give me the size of the company. Are they asking those kind of marketing type questions, you know, around target market and their demographics, psychographics, their buying behaviors, how they operate? And are they all putting it back into one place where the organization, and I don't care how big the organization is, it can be pretty remedial, but the organization can look and say, gosh, look, we have some common denominators here. And so I think that's really, really insightful. And when you talk about the structure of sales changing and that inbound, it's really being able to get some structure and some process around it so that it's really a pro sales model, if you think about it. It's trying to get deeper empathy, right?
Yep. And in regards to data collection, I mean, that's a part of the process. When you have your call to action and you've got an inbound lead, you do a follow-up call, it's an email, it's doing a demo, and it's recording that information. So you can find common trends, common objections, what's working, what's not working. And you don't need to be a large company and use Salesforce. I mean, you can put everything in a Google Doc. Mm-hmm. There are lots of free CRM software out there that you can leverage and use.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I love it. I mean, you've got some, you know, this is the beauty of talking to people. This is the beauty of finding stories. It's why I ask you about you. I mean, it's not, you know, people sometimes are like, well, why do you, aren't you just want to get to the topics? No, because a lot of times the insight is into the background. When I ask Sarah about, you know, what she major in and where she, I mean, and she tells me the story of this path that she thought she was on and how her interaction within a sorority or event coordination got her into the industry and created this opportunity and little light bulbs went on. That's pretty cool. And it not only gives us insight into you, but some of what, you know, the magic that we all need to bottle. A lot of times we have some of those stories from our background and, you know, the flame flickers a bit and you know, there's great opportunity in this industry and for people who have some vision and some energy around it. So, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that. Let me taking up a lot of your time, but let me ask you this. So give one piece of advice, you know, in terms of that first step. I think there's, you know, again, it's getting that traction, that kind of stuff. If you walk into a room with a bunch of printers and they say, Sarah, please tell us what's the first thing we should do, you know, what would that be?
So I would say have a strong, unique value proposition. Mm-hmm. I talk to so many printers, so many distributors, or I go to a trade show and I cannot tell you what half the people do.
Right, right.
Someone tells me they're a printer, that doesn't mean anything to me. I want a very clear, concise explanation of what someone does and how they're unique and different. And right. I think without that, you can't sell and you're not going to win new business.
Right, right. Yeah, that's spot on. That's spot on. Well, I'm glad that we reached out to each other, and you and I are going to connect on the 14th, right?
Yes. So I will be in Atlanta the week of the 12th. So I'm in town for a 2-day sales training, and then have a bunch of other meetings. So yeah, we'll touch base as it gets closer as to where we're going to meet. But I'm super excited to connect in person.
Yeah, me too. And then we'll suck the air out of the room and some more. This is really good stuff. I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation, and I think this has been really, really cool for our readership, because not only are you someone who's immersed in it, you've adapted and continue to adapt, and I think that's, and you can just hear the energy about it in your voice. So I really appreciate you taking the time, and I will see you on the 14th.
Yes, for having me, and have a productive rest of your day.
You too. Thanks, Sarah.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sarah as much as I did. It was really, really fun to connect with someone who has so much energy around the future of our industry. Clearly, she is passionate about bringing a new crop of talent to the industry. I think that is something that's probably pretty important to all of us, that we are attractive to the next generations. And we need to understand how to connect with them, because they are going to be part of what sustains us. In the same time, I'm also was really encouraged by her perspective on sales. And, you know, I'm very pro sales, but clearly we're in a day and age where the connection has to be different. It's just simply not the same as when we could knock on doors and cold call and break through the gatekeepers, that type of thing. So we're in a different age, and I think as she leads her new organization, Procure at 5, she is embarking on that strategy and understanding that connection takes a very different path than it did in the past. So my thanks to Sarah. I can't thank her enough for spending some time, and I'm looking forward to hearing from her again. A reminder that this episode of Brushstrokes was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. If they aren't biting, catch them with content. We channel content and connections at conduitinc.com. And for all your custom publishing needs, visit our website at www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, thanks again for listening. I really, really appreciate you spending some time with us. And until next time, be the buffalo.